Greetings and welcome to Caribbean Forum here on the Uhuru Radio Network, where we expand our ability to communicate and unite the struggles of African people towards victory and independence in our lifetime. I'm Ron Bob Semple, and here on the Forum, we'll examine issues that affect Caribbean and Caribbean American nationals, both at home and across the diaspora. We'll bring you news, views, interviews, thought-provoking discussions, Caribbean theater of the mind, and of course, musical interludes. Yes, the cholera outbreak in Haiti, which has taken an additional 1,000-plus lives and infected thousands more since that devastating earthquake on January 12th, has now reportedly spread into the adjoining Dominican Republic. Reportedly, there have been protesters throwing rocks and burning tires in Haiti as Haitians are showing signs of impatience, retaliating, to the ineptitude of the government, which is scheduled to change in just over 1 week. But joining us from the Dominican Republic will be Haitian-born actor, producer, and director Jimmy Jean-Louis. Jean-Louis was seen weekly on NBC's drama Heroes, which unfortunately has not been renewed for a fifth season. In our Caribbean Theater of the Mind segment, we'll chat with the artistic director of the Caribbean Cultural Theater out of Brooklyn, New York, as they're getting ready for an exciting presentation. So tell someone that Caribbean Forum is on the air here on the Uhuru Radio Network. We heard every Saturday from 9 to 11 Eastern Standard Time. So just spread the word. We're here every Saturday, and we are still holding on for Haiti. Here's Steel Pulse.
I know it's easy to say, don't let this earthquake get you down, as you hold your head and ball in times of sorrow. I know it's easy to say, when your back is up against the wall, don't be forsaken, no, cause there's tomorrow. Yes, hold on. As we all share with you your devastation, I know it's easy to say, you got to keep your head up high, but we truly sympathize with your frustration. Yes, hold on.
Yes, welcome back to Caribbean Forum. That is Steel Pulse with Hold On for Haiti. And holding on for us here on the Caribbean Forum is Haitian-born actor, director, and producer Jimmy Jean-Louis. Jimmy, good morning and welcome to Caribbean Forum and welcome to the Uhuru Radio Network.
Good morning.
It's a pleasure speaking with you, Jimmy, under these circumstances. As I mentioned, you are Haitian-born, but you are at this moment in the Dominican Republic. Why are you there right now, Jimmy?
I'm here because there is a film festival going on in the Dominican Republic that started on Tuesday. And on Thursday, we went to Haiti to also open the film festival in Haiti because we wanted to share it with Haiti. So I just had to come back here in the DR, but I'm going back to Haiti tomorrow.
It has been reported that there have been a few cases of the cholera that have spread to the Dominican Republic. Have you heard any further news as to what the how widespread that is, if at all?
Well, to be honest with you, last night I couldn't sleep. I think I had diarrhea and all kind of things. And in a split moment, that thought came to my mind.
I'm sure it would.
Maybe I was one of them. No, I think one case has been reported so far of a Haitian in Dominican Republic. The same thing in the States as well, from what I hear. There is also,
right, in Florida.
Yeah.
Yes.
But in Haiti, you know, things are not getting better, because right now the Haitians are frustrated. Some people go in the streets, whether it's in the capital or in the provinces, you know, to scream about it.
Yes.
And I think a couple of the UN people actually died as well in the provinces, because it's been told that kind of cholera came from Nepal, and I don't think it's been clarified by too many people or by anybody, but the word is, you know, it's from the Nepal. So the Haitians are trying to protest against the Nepalese,
right? Because apparently
the UN,
right? Apparently the word has gotten around that yes, this cholera did start from a UN contingent from Nepal, and it's clear, Jimmy, that your brothers and sisters have lost patience and are now protesting and burning tires and throwing rocks. And you know, I hate to say this, but it is understandable. You know, they have been so patient, enduring the earthquake and the hurricanes and the flooding and whatnot and the poverty, that, you know, as we say back in Guyana, you know, they have reached their giddy limit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, before that cholera, they were unhappy with the UN anyway, because the UN has been in Haiti for the past 6 or 7 years, you know, about 8,000 of them. And a lot of Haitians, you know, believe that they've not been doing anything but really using the situation just to be there and spend money, because from what I've been told, it's about $55 million that they need to spend a month, $55 million a month they need to spend with the UN forces in Haiti.
Yeah,
it's
but
a
Jimmy,
lot of money.
Jimmy, right, $55 a month, yes, as you rightfully said, is a lot of money. But where are the billions of dollars that were pledged, you know, in a week or two after January 12th, when everybody was so sympathetic, you know, to the Haitian community and the country? And where has all of that money, why hasn't that money filtered into Haiti? You may not be able to answer that, Jim, and I understand that.
Yeah, I mean, the money was pledged, but it gets complicated. Because if one country pledges a certain amount of money, that country wants some kind of how do you say that? Let's take the example of America. You know, if America pledged some money, they would probably want the money to be used by American contractors and pretty much be used by Americans going there.
Even so, under such circumstances?
Yes, unfortunately. So I think that's a lot of what has been going on with all that money that's been pledged, and it's just been pledged, you know, and which doesn't mean too much. A lot of people, you know, will tell you it's just a political move from whoever pledged the money. But yeah, the difficulty is the fact that, yeah, the country that pledges the money, they want to sort of have a say on how the money is going to be spent.
Right, they want to ensure that it doesn't fall into the wrong hands.
Yeah, and they also want to be the ones, you know, spending it.
Yes, but look, Jimmy, look at the percentage of what has actually been received. You mean, if you're going to have concern as to whether it's going to fall into the wrong hands, you mean, there's so much that has to be done in Haiti. The rubble is still piled high. There are no heavy equipment in there. You've just been there last Thursday. Just paint a picture for us, Jimmy, as to how Haiti looks today or a couple of days ago when you were there.
Well, 10 months later, unfortunately, it doesn't really look any different from the first week of the earthquake. As you all know, only 2% of the rubble has been removed.
2%,
yeah, 2%, which is nothing. 2%. And so we still have a lot of people sleeping under the tents. I think it's about 1.3 million people still don't have access to food. Most people, there is a black market going on where some of the food that was supposed to be distributed are being sold, and also some people that were supposed to distribute the food kept the food just so they can make a business out of it. And the bad thing is some of that food is now expired, meaning by that it's not good.
Which would compound that cholera outbreak. Jimmy, as a son of Haiti, Jimmy, how does this make you feel going back to Haiti after 9.5 months and seeing the situation that you witnessed on Thursday?
Yeah, I mean, the reality, Ron, is for me, the Haitian problem hasn't started from the earthquake, you know?
Yeah, we understand that.
Yeah, Haiti had a lot of problems before the earthquake. So as a Haitian, I'll probably take it back from before the earthquake, you know, to see the conditions in which the Haitians were living and in which Haiti was before the earthquake. And now, of course, there's an earthquake, you know, it's just terrible as a Haitian. I'm here in the Dominican Republic, and I kid you not, it is the same island, but it is two different kind of life.
Yes, absolutely.
Completely different. And it does make me feel bad, you know, sometimes.
Yes, I know it could be emotional, my brother.
And
you have been doing a lot to help your fellow brothers and sisters. If you've just joined us, we're chatting with Jimmy Jean-Louis, a Haitian-born actor and producer and director. He's speaking to us from the Dominican Republic, which neighbors his native land of Haiti. And we're talking about the situation in Haiti, what's happening now. And as I was about to say, Jimmy, that you have been doing a lot, and you are the founder of Hollywood Unites for Haiti. Tell us about your organization and what your goal or goals are.
Hollywood Unites for Haiti has for mission to help the underprivileged kids, underprivileged youth in Haiti. And I started that organization about 2.5 years ago, so before the earthquake. And that's why I told you earlier on that the problems of Haiti were way before the earthquake. So we've been able to support, assist some organizations in the country. After the earthquake, we were able to give, you know, basic relief help, you know, such as food, hygienic kits, pants, and all kind of things. And now we're in the process of building a school in Okade.
Right.
And in reality, we try to do whatever we can. You know, it's not a big organization, meaning by that we don't have the kind of funds that we really want to do our job. But you know, we do as much as we can. And for the earthquake, we also partnered up with PADF, which is the Pan American Development Foundation. So, and the OAS, Organization of America, of American States. So the three organizations, you know, got together and provided a lot of help after the earthquake.
As a non-governmental organization, Have you been up against much red tape from the government? You did mention a little earlier that some of the food stuff has expired, and we've had guests on this broadcast talking of the fact that that there's a lot of food stuff and a lot of commodities that the Haitian brothers and sisters need that are just, you know, bogged down with a lot of red tape and bureaucracy and sitting in warehouses.
Yeah, that's the reality.
It's not only a reality, but it is also painful that to know that in spite of what is going on, what the Haitians are enduring, that this bureaucracy has to play such an important part that that, you know, lives have been lost as a result of this red tape. How much support have you been getting from your Hollywood, your fellow Hollywood thespians and others to assist with not only the culture and the sports of the underprivileged youth, but, you know, whatever help that you can give to those in Haiti?
You know, I think Hollywood has been quite supportive so far. It was one of the first groups to actually raise money for the earthquake. George Clooney with the telethon raised about $64 million 2 weeks after the earthquake. Had a couple of concerts in benefit of for Haiti from BET, MTV, and VH1. So I think the celebrity's been there. As far as we're concerned, Hollywood Unite for Haiti. Yeah, we've had support as well from people. We brought some people in Haiti so they could see what was going on in the country. And I know some other people, such as the likes of Angelina Jolie, you know, the likes of Sean Penn, have been present, you know.
Yes.
And Sean Penn is actually one person, I should say, is exemplary, because he stayed for pretty much a straight 6 months after the earthquake in Haiti.
What did you think of the friction that arose between himself and Wyclef Jean when he was attempting to run?
Yeah, first of all, let us talk about Sean. You know, he's got he's running a camp that has about
50,000
people, and if you do have a chance to go to the camp, you will realize that it's a real village. You know, it's a real village that pretty much has everything: school, hospital, playgrounds, and all kind of things. And he also lived there. So I think he's been doing a great job. As far as the little friction between Wyclef and Sean, you know, I mean, I guess Sean just liked to say what he's got in his mind, and he just expressed what he saw. You know, I try not to concentrate into those kind of conflicts, because, you know, I don't believe it's important. It's more destructive than anything else.
You did say that you took a few of your fellow thespians and other associates to Haiti.
Yes.
During a few visits that you've made, and you did a lot of filming of what's going on there in Haiti. And as a result of that filming was born a documentary, Haiti,
yes,
Haiti 1653. Tell us about that documentary, and what's the origin or the association of that name, Haiti 1653?
Well, Haiti 1653, which is 453, which is when the earthquake happened in Haiti. It's a documentary that, first of all, not just document the earthquake in Haiti, but very much through my eyes, because I've had cameras following me 2 days after I went to Haiti, just to cover every single thing that I've experienced, whether it was personally, meaning by that with my family, my parents, the discovery of the collapsed houses that my parents and myself and my sisters have, and also covering, you know, the overall aspect of the earthquake, you know, trying to be personal with some people that, you know, that lost a lot during the earthquake. Mm-hmm. So I've been going there like 2 days after the earthquake until now. So I've been, right. I took about 5 to 6 trips, you know, so you'll have a time. You'd be able to understand the evolution of the lifestyle of the Haitian from the first day until now, which unfortunately it's not huge, you know. 10 months later, you know, you sort of have the same kind of images that you had a week later, but at the same time, you know, we try to have the insight, you know, from the Haitians living there. How do they live it? Because, you know, it's easy to just go there and take a camera and just flash a few pictures. But it's a different thing when you have to be in it and you have to live there. You have to stay there. There's no other escape for you. How do you live it?
Mm-hmm. A few minutes ago, you mentioned your parents, and the day after the earthquake, you went down there in search of your parents. What condition did you find them in?
Shocked. Definitely mentally disturbed, mm-hmm. you know, by what happened. I'd say my dad was a lot more touched than my mom.
How are they doing now?
Sorry?
How are they doing now?
They're still trying to recover, I guess. You know, it's a process. They're okay. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we learn to resist the fight. We learn to fight the fight, and we just adjust to the fight. So they're okay. But yeah, I think my dad probably took a bigger hit than my mom. Mm. But, you know, it's not just them. It's the people around them as well. You know, uncles, aunts, some of my good friends. It's a terrible thing that happened.
Yeah, absolutely. We just have a few more minutes because I know you're very busy. You have that film festival there in the Dominican Republic, and I'd just like to chat in the last few moments that we have about your television and your modeling career and your film career. As I mentioned in the opening, that Heroes, the NBC drama production, has not been renewed for the fifth season. What motivates you to keep moving or keep pushing on? Because I don't know if there's a tendency for Jimmy Jean-Louis to be pigeonholed in certain characters, the very fact that he is, you know, Haitian-born and he still maintains that thick Caribbean-Haitian accent. Do you sometimes feel pigeonholed?
Not really, because, yes, as a Haitian, I've been able to play different kind of characters, whether it's from the Caribbean, from Africa, sometimes even from Europe, from France. So that works for me. The one thing that I've not really played too much right now, it's the American. But it's just one character that I've not played, but I've played many other characters.
And you've done a heck of a job, I must say.
Thank you. And what I've been doing lately is going to different markets and explore different markets. I've been working a lot in France. I did a movie in Ghana in June. And yeah, that's what excites me, you know, to be able to go to different markets and work, because from working in those places, I also learn a lot. I learn from new culture, new ways of doing things, and it's extremely important for an artist. So
a lot of things that you may take for granted.
Exactly. Even here in the Dominican Republic, I'm here and I see that they're doing extremely well in the film business. And I would love to maybe come back here and shoot something, even if it has to be in Spanish, you know. My Spanish is all right.
We've got an email in from one of our listeners. A question for you, Jimmy. Does your documentary speak to the history of attacks and theft by the U.S., France, and others that imposed the poverty and situation on Haiti that made it unable to deal with the earthquake? Can you speak to that now?
Well, we touch upon a little bit of the history of Haiti, but, you know, I don't want that to be a piece that if you go to Wikipedia, you can find all the answers. It's more of a personal kind of journey. You know, it's trying to get people to understand Haiti through my eyes. So, you know, I try to make it as personal as possible. What the person is talking about, you know, I'm sure it will be done, but probably by somebody else, and that should be done in depth. You know, that should be one topic, and mm-hmm. do a documentary about mm-hmm. that and just that, because mm-hmm. it's extremely important for people to understand that aspect as well, because they will then understand why Haiti is in such a bad situation.
Well, at the end of this interview, we will play the trailer for that documentary, Haiti 1653. But in the few moments that we have left with you, Jimmy Jean-Louis, I'd like for you to just speak to our Haitian and Creole listeners to this broadcast as to what as a community, what the Haitian community can do to assist what's going on with the brothers and sisters, whatever contributions they can make, and appeal to those also listening to log on to the website for the Hollywood Unites for Haiti and how donations can be made.
All that in Creole?
We can also need for the English listeners also.
No, I mean, what do people can do from outside of this of the country is to, you know, to be involved, get interested in what's going on in the country, and obviously Haiti cannot do without the Haitian outside of Haiti. It's just a question of getting involved in situations or in projects that, you know, that you might understand, and definitely reach back to the family down there, because the family down there needs you. And what was the second or third part of your question again? It was such a long question.
Dans Creole.
En Creole, oh oui. Bon, pour tout haïtien qui attend des mieux, malheureusement, nous connaissons une vie ou situation très difficile. Mais il faut nous qu'aimer là, il faut nous continuer à supporter Haïti, il faut nous continuer à supporter Haïtiens qui vivent en Haïti, parce que sans nous, Haïti ne va pas avancer. So, continuer, et puis qu'aimer la foi, Jean Mounio dit, parce que quoi qu'il arrive, bagaille pour changer quand même.
How can one get in contact with Hollywood Unites for Haiti?
Just go to hollywoodunitesforhaiti.org or HUFH.org.
Well, Jimmy Jean-Louis, thank you very much. Merci beaucoup, monsieur. Thank you for what you have been doing. And it's always a pleasure chatting with you. And what's next for Jimmy Jean-Louis, film or television-wise?
What is next? First of all, thank you for having me. And it's probably going to be a few movies. As I said, I shot a movie in Ghana. It's called Sinking Sands. It should come out soon. People should watch out for the documentary, Haiti 1653.
Has it been officially released?
No, not yet. I'm showing 15 minutes of it tomorrow morning here in the Dominican Republic.
Right.
But people can go to 1653.com to have all of the info about it. And so I'm also going to be doing a very interesting project in France but I can't really speak about it now. Let's shoot it first, and then people will know about it.
Well, when you're ready to talk about it, Jimmy, just let me know, and we'll have you on the broadcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Speaking with Jimmy Jean-Louis, the Haitian-born actor, producer, and director, and he's just about to release a documentary, Haiti 1653, the time of that devastating earthquake in Haiti on January 12th. Thank you, Jimmy, and you're listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple. We'll just take a short break, and we'll play that trailer for that documentary and some other information from Jimmy with regard his organization, Haiti Unites. Hollywood, I'm sorry, Unites for Haiti. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
When I actually got there and I could actually see with my own eyes, I could not believe what was happening to the country.
This is the presidential palace down.
To see these collapsed buildings, the hospitals, the banks, the universities, knowing that there are people buried underneath.
This is the situation here. They're digging from a supermarket that collapsed, so they're finding food underneath.
So the minute they stop, everybody's gonna rush in, whatever they find. Instead of finding some food, they might find some human body.
At that particular time, they told me that this is what and how the end of the world is going to look like. I'll probably say, okay, because that's exactly what some of the places in Haiti looked like the end of the world.
The thing is, they don't have enough space to put them, so they just have to burn them. So what they have here is a pile of bodies. That's the only way. Otherwise, they have too many bodies. What they do is they just pile them.
Yeah.
They pile them in the truck.
Yeah.
And they just burn the truck. They just put it out there and just burn it. That's the only way. It's been going on ever since the first day. This is the fourth day right now.
Today, just around where I live, I saw tens of bodies that are being burned. And they do that every 1 or 2 hours. Devastating. And that's without saying about the state of the country. Everywhere you go, everything is dead. Everything needs to be done again in Haiti. I don't know how we're gonna do it.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
It's the Marcus Garvey Legacy Crew.
Set sail with the Uhuru Movement and the African People Socialist Party on December 12th through 18th for a 7-day cruise to Key West, Grand Cayman, and Ocho Rios, Jamaica, aboard the luxurious Carnival Freedom cruise ship. Special guests include our very own Chairman Omali Eshetela, leader of the Uhuru Movement, and the very talented Ron Bob Semple, creator of the Spirit of Marcus Garvey. A one-man show in which Semple delivers an uncanny exactness of the legendary Garvey, transporting the onlooker back to the time of the revolutionary spirit that gave birth to the African Socialist Movement. Cabin prices are from $519 per person. For more information, please visit our website at uhurulegacycruise.com. Again, that's uhurulegacycruise.com. Book your room today with Tanya's Travel by calling 352-232-2131 or by email at tanyastravel@bellsouth.net. We hope you all can set sail with us on the ship named for our struggle, Freedom Uhuru.
Of the Haitian kids die before the age of 5. 75% of the Haitian kids do not attend school. More than half of the Haitian people live with $1 a day. Yeah, this is Jimmy Jean-Louis. I was born in Haiti and I enjoyed my times that I lived in Haiti. But now being in Hollywood, I realize that Haiti is not doing well. I've been visiting Haiti and it's heartbreaking to see the situation down there. The ways people are living, the ways kids are being abandoned. Something needs to be done. We need to help them. We need to unite. We all need to unite for Haiti.
Jimmy, thank you for doing this.
No, thank you.
And it's great to see the beautiful people here.
Yeah.
The beautiful people and the joy with which people carry themselves.
The spirit of Haitian is pretty high, you know, most of the time. It's just a shame to see the country in such a situation.
But we're going to tell people about it.
Exactly. We'd scream loud.
We're here for Jimmy, for Hollywood United, for Haiti.
Hollywood unites. Hollywood unites.
Hollywood unites.
Hollywood unites.
Hollywood unites for Haiti.
Hollywood unites.
Hollywood unites for Haiti.
Hi, I'm Brandon Routh, and here to support Hollywood United for Haiti.
Hollywood unites for Haiti.
Hollywood unites for Haiti.
Hollywood United for Haiti.
Godspeed.
The result is right there, because we are able to get money for the PADF and the OAS and Hollywood Unites for Haiti to do this kind of work.
The reason why it's so well organized is because it's people from those areas that are doing the work and not some organization. I mean, it is through the PADF, but we're really using people from the neighborhood. So that's why they're able to identify the right people and they know them by name and by where they live. Okay. If it was from an organization coming from outside, it would be impossible. They wouldn't know who those people are, where they live, if they're lying or not. So, you know, that's why it's important to use the Haitians.
Where the money's actually going.
No, but to specifically use the people from the neighborhood that need the help. Guys, watch out as you come down. C'est eux-mêmes qui fait. Ah, oh, that's good to know. Parce que c'est moi qui t'ai voyé.
Okay. Ouais.
That's good to hear. Like some of the work that we did, you know, we helped actually cleaning this place. Those places, you know, nobody can actually go and help them with the big bulldozers. It's impossible to get in. That's why they're struggling as far as getting any help. And they're the ones that actually really need the help, because those people have nothing left.
Most of the kids we have here never went to school before in their life. Okay. This is the first time they come to school. Yeah. And plus they are so poor, they won't be able to go to the mainstream school because they don't have shoes, they don't have underwear, they cannot pay the first primary of the school.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to somewhat support everything for the kids who come here.
Yeah. You have to think big.
you are right next to Onaville, on the east side of Onaville.
And so which is?
Yes, which is over there, right behind that little mountain over there.
In our plan, we're going to try to get about 10 kids in each house and build about 25 houses. It's a nice dream, actually. You know, it's one of those things that, you know, if it comes through, then you'll be proud to say to yourself or to your kids, yes, this is what I participated in. And then we see how we're gonna follow the rest of the effort, you know, to try to rebuild Haiti. So that was one part, and we keep moving, keep fighting, never give up, never give up.
Hi, this is Jimmy Jean-Louis, and I am from Haiti. I just visited Haiti, and my Haiti is gone. We need to rebuild Haiti. We need your help. Be a hero for Haiti. Donate to HaitianHero.com or HollywoodUnitesForHaiti.org. Thank you.
Yes, that was Jimmy Jean-Louis just asking for your help. It was a rather emotional trip for him going back to Haiti, and as he said, that Haiti is gone, but not in the true sense of the word. Here is Tanisha out of Guyana, Don't Want to Be Born.
So many graduates from UG, but no job, no future they see. So many dropouts climb on the road, so many gunmen they're on the run. So many want to be like Feynman or a kingpin like Roger Khan. Mama, it's so much trouble I see. I want to stay here in your belly. Oh yes, my sweet mother, yes. A lot of things I cannot forget. Oh yes, my sweet mother. I refuse to move and I say in love, Mama. To find your way, 16 and uneducated, and my papa he went away. When I think about the GRA and all the money that disappear, Clico gone and left we in pain. The sugar industry gone down the drain. Just look at the opposition, they get paid for doing nothing. Tell me, how can people survive when they only get a 6% rise? Oh yes, my sweet mother, yes. So much water come to my eyes. Oh yes, my sweet mother. I stay right here, ain't going nowhere, Mama. We struggle to stay alive. A single parent in this crisis, it will be hard to survive. When I look at the parliament, how they fuss and fight and reject. Tell you it ain't making no sense. People have to endure enough, enough nonsense. How can a customs man have 5 cars, a house and a Prado van, after he work in 1 year? Tell me the logic I cannot see. Mama, mama, please tell me. And he's still walking wrong scotch free. Oh yes, my sweet mother. I'm so afraid and I'm saying it loud, Mama. I don't turning wrong in your belly. No, it's time to go to sleep. I had a dream I was president, and I traveled and represent. I used to be out all of the time and just come back home for a lime. Mama, the Georgetown Hospital, that place does make people ball. You're going there to treat a gum boil and end up 6 feet deep in the soil. Drugs passing through to Mary, none of these scanners they do not see. Oh yes, my sweet mother, I stay right here, ain't going nowhere. Mama,
so to the roof. Manufacturer, maybe crew. Everybody plays the fool.
The one and only Slinger Francisco, better known as the Mighty Sparrow, with that medley, United We Stand and Dream Lover. I know it's, on Eastern Standard Time, it's almost 10 o'clock, so if you are still dreaming at this point in time, you probably got in about a half hour ago. After that Friday night hang, I can understand. You're listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Simple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network. Myself and my chief engineer, Brother Naibinga Zimbabwe, he's just having a good, raw-looking old time here on this Saturday morning. Our guest on the second hour, as I mentioned, it will be the artistic director of the Caribbean Cultural Theater out of Brooklyn, New York, and we'll get to him live. But prior to that, just about a year ago, the Caribbean Cultural Theater had a session where they were talking about their demise, the different ways in the Caribbean, how they would refer to either a jambi or jobless, and this was a rather interesting forum that was conducted by our upcoming guest, Mr. Ewan MacDonald. Just take a listen to this session conducted by the Caribbean Cultural Theater just about a year ago.
Thank you. When I say creek, you say crack. Creek,
crack,
creek,
crack.
Monkey, brocky, bop. It's a paparazzi. When I say crick, you say
crack.
My name is Ewan MacDonald. I'm with an organization called the Caribbean Cultural Theatre. We're a Brooklyn-based performing arts company. Many of us can't sing. So I will not be singing for you this evening. When we spoke a couple of months ago, this whole thing of death and dying and how could we be a part of it, one of the things that came to mind was how we explored it through storytelling. And the folklore of the region. It's kind of hard because when you talk about the Caribbean in the truest sense, the space does not truly exist. It's a shifting sand, as it were. Caribbean people come from literally the entire world. And therefore, their stories, their folklore are really evolving stories that have part Spanish, part English, part Native, a lot of African, some Asian, and what now many of us now call Yard. But we're all now Caribbean, Jamaican, Trinidad, and in that growing reality, we are finding ways to express this what I call afterlife traditions. Couple of things we have to agree on for the telling of any story. Certainly any story about the afterlife. One, all the stories are true. No matter how bizarre, no matter how we put them together, everything in them true. True?
True.
Okay. The second thing in telling stories relating to the afterlife tradition is that they are communal exercises. As with death and dying, it's not just one person dead. You have to die on your own. But they quickly become community exercises. And the storytelling takes on that sort of phenomenon as well. That there are shared experiences. Many of the stories start with one voice and end with three voices down the way. Because everybody know, oh, and yes, that's the third part of stories. They never really happen to you. They always happen to somebody you hear about. Your granny tell you, your grandfather tell you, somebody up the lane you heard it from many generations ago. But interestingly, it never really happened to you. Maybe in this situation, we should also add that in telling a good ghost story, that we should include other spirits. But we can't for protocol, or at least not me, because once I drink it, done. So now Caribbean ghost stories have come by different names, different traditions, different ghost entities. Some of them are kind. The transition of friends and relatives, they're really there to guide and protect us. Some of them take on less than caring characteristics, reflecting many of the religious boogeymen and religious concepts that we have been fed. Others include inanimate objects. Some have animals, some have manifestations of people, but they're all transitional. But in these ghost stories, we all take on part the teller and part the experience of the entity itself. So instead of me telling you about Ducky, because that's singularly for most of us here Jamaicans who appreciate what a Ducky is. But a Ducky is supposed to be the manifestation of a dead person. But some of us know it as Jumbi from Trinidad, from Guyana, largely Eastern Caribbean. And those two are supposed to be this general catch-all of Duppies or Jumbies. So you see what I'm saying? What? Gopi. Dopi. Okay, oh, Dopi as opposed to Dopi. Okay, you're from where?
Guyana.
Okay, cool. Okay, I'll be going through some of them. All right? So we have Dopi, Dopi, and Dopi. And Jumbi. And that is just the ones we actually know. Then you have those that have nothing to do with people. So we start with those. Many of them like Latinos, help me here now. Chupacabra.
Cuco.
How about?
Cuco.
Cuco cabra.
Cuco. No, we have chupacabra. Cuco.
Okay, because I know but chupacabra is a cuco. What is that? But chupacabra is supposed to be a blood sucker.
Yeah.
Supposed to eat like goats, sort of thing. And this is supposed to be that's all, nothing with all these ghost things. They love blood. But they love life. They love to exude life from those who are living, and this is it. So chupacabra is supposed to be bloodsucker. In Jamaica, you have rolling calf. bowl, Reagan bowl. You don't hear about a Reagan bowl. All right, but that is supposed to be part of that. But then you also have those that are, come again? No, we're coming, sweetheart. Okay, I'm done. It's my story or it's yours? We're coming there, we're coming. Calm down. In addition to the entities that are not human or part human, there are those that are. Very few of them seem to be men, and I don't know why. Most of them are women, and I'm beginning to understand why. But very few of them actually are men. In some parts of the Caribbean, we have the word Lagahu.
Yes.
And a Lagahu, and I'm getting different pronunciations depending on where you're from, but Haitians should know Lagahu.
Lugaru.
Okay. Which is supposed to be a man, really a man.
Well,
not any man, because apparently he can slip out of his skin
yeah.
and take on animal form.
Yeah.
And apparently the way you catch this entity is that you need to catch the skin. You catch the skin
salt.
And you put salt in the skin. So when he comes back, before daybreak, he can't put back on his skin. That's apparently what kills him.
Yeah.
So for those of you who are hunting lavahoos, that is how you catch a lavahoo.
Put water on your house.
Put
salt on your house and by your window. They can't come inside.
But salt is supposed to be this universal stuff of all spirits.
Yeah.
You know? And I must admit, I'm somewhat skeptical about many of these things because I don't know how you know to throw salt, and if it's kosher salt or sea salt or table salt. You know. But whatever salt you use, salt.
Yeah.
Okay? Or bath salt. Yes?
All we use bath was salt.
Just salt.
Thank you, darling. Yes.
Okay. Alright. Cool. So we have Lavahu, we have Chupacabra, we have rolling calf. Yes, sorry. And yes, we have a moon gazer. Now, moon gazer, similar to zombie,
yeah.
or a phantom. It's supposed to be a man. A Masakura man. Very tall man. Not as average tall. Apparently, he's supposed to be tall.
Right.
With the ability to span large areas, either across a river or across a whole bay or across a road. And you are not supposed to walk or sail between his legs. Now, if you see a man that very tall, what would inveigle you to try and go between his legs? Not yet come to understand, but when you go between this man's legs, he's supposed to be closing them very quickly, and that suffocates the victim that is between his legs. I would imagine with anybody else, if a man squeezes you hard enough between your legs, you will die. Yeah. But that apparently is the attribute of a moon gazer. Let me hear you say moon gazer.
Moon gazer.
Mister, you ever hear about
Jumbie
Bridge in Barataria?
Jumbie Bridge?
No. Yeah. You never hear about Jumbie Bridge in Barataria?
No, sorry.
But how this man get lecture here and about them thing?
Yeah!
Let me tell you.
She's questioning your
credentials. No, but it's true. No! Barataria is this place in Trinidad. It's okay. A tongue in Trinidad.
Okay.
And it had long time. There's a true story.
Uh-huh.
Over two, it's a true story.
Yes.
They have this place called Jumbie Bridge, and it used to have a set of Jumbie who used to sit down on the bridge in the night, and they used to talk and laugh. And none of the Jumbie and them had hair.
Okay.
No hair, for true. And then when you go to talk, that's crazy. We got that talk. They had this donkey. It used to have a set of gold teeth in the mouth.
A donkey,
yes. No, for true. They used to call it the Bellman Jackass. Yes. It's true. That's true. you think? My mother tell me that.
I okay, so we have a Belmont jackass.
Yeah.
Which is not to be mistaken with the headless jackass in Brazil. Apparently, they also have an entity that roams the whole of Brazil.
That was in my brain, yes.
With no head. And you know someone in the community is going to die when you hear the headless jackass start to bray. What he used to bray, I don't know, but he have no head. Wrapping quickly. But the women, rushing through the women, we have Damloren, we have Sukuyam, we have River Muma. River Muma is supposed to be a mermaid. And we have...
Hey, let me tell you all your story. That's true thing. No, for true, that's true thing. My father, they tell me long time when I was small, at night he was walking in the road, and he see this beautiful woman. And she was pretty with a nice big long dress. And she was smelling sweeter perfume and had a big rose in her hair. And he said, good night. And the lady smiled and she said, good night. And then she asked the man, she asked my father, true story, she asked my father to walk she home because she was afraid to walk in the dark. So he holds her hand and they're walking home. And then something just tell him, let me size up she leg. When he looked down on the woman's legs, he see one big hairy cow foot. For true. Guess what it was?
Elijah bless.
Yeah, my father said that all the hairs stand up all on his hand and on his head. And he just take off running down the road. And Elijah bless, she stand up so when she had a care, but she said, and she born you lucky. You know what would have happened to my father if she didn't catch him?
What?
She would have made him buzzardy and make him break his neck in a ravine.
And that is
a Elijah bless, yes. They have one human foot, a human leg, and a cow foot. That's true thing.
Of the afterlife communal storytelling that we have in the Caribbean. Ladies and gentlemen, could I just introduce you to Miss Diane Dixon from Jamaica? And Miss Susan Oldley Kennedy from Trinidad and Tobago. And again, we're from the Caribbean Cultural Theatre and we have some information on the table. Walk good and good luck in walk with you.
Tune into Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. on the Uhuru Radio Network. We examine issues that affect Caribbean and Caribbean American nationals, both at home and across the diaspora. If you're not listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network, then your radio is not on.
You're listening to...
Yes, sir, we're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 Eastern Standard Time. And you were listening to that piece called Walking the Dead. It was produced by the Caribbean Cultural Theater out of Brooklyn. And we'd like to welcome to the broadcast this morning the artistic director of the Caribbean Cultural Theater out of Brooklyn, New York, Mr. E. Wayne McDonald. E. Wayne, good morning and welcome to Caribbean Forum and welcome to the Uhuru Radio Network.
Thanks, Ron Bob. A warm morning to you and your listeners. Thanks for the opportunity. As you rightly mentioned, yes, we are in Brooklyn, so we don't have the experience of the temperature warmth, but we love the vibes that have been.
Oh, I was just about asking exactly where did that warmth come from? Because
the warmth we have to keep within us, and hence part of the mandate of the Caribbean Cultural Theatre to keep the spirit, the heart of the Caribbean culture alive up here,
and also keep the seats in the theatre warm. Also, right.
Well, yes, and in fairness to many of our audiences, they have been helping us to do that for the past 10 years. We've been based downtown Brooklyn in the Arts District in a facility called South Oxford Space for the past eight plus years.
Tell us...
Most of our activities take place at St. Francis College downtown Brooklyn and almost anywhere else that would have us.
Right. As I mentioned, we played that piece that was done a year ago, Walking the Dead.
Yes.
Talk to us about about that particular forum and presentation, and why you felt it was necessary to present something of that nature?
Well, that piece was done as part of a wider project by the Brooklyn Arts Council to look at funerary, death, afterlife, dying traditions for the various immigrant groups throughout the New York area, primarily the Brooklyn area. And when we were approached, we are not a dance company primarily, and we are not a singing company. You don't want to hear me sing even on a dead day. So we started to explore how can we look at the rich afterlife traditions that are throughout the Caribbean region. And we looked at, and we banked on the possibility of doing stories or exploring the myths surrounding who we are. How we preserve the dead, how we interact with spirits, partly because of religion, partly because of other secular myths. And we realized that there was a tremendous amount of that that has been tying us together. But it also is an extension of a larger body of work we do. We also, for the past 4 years, have been looking at wakes, traditional Caribbean wakes, in the context of celebratory exercises for particular Caribbean notables. So we either do them on our own or we do them in conjunction with other organizations. Mm-hmm. So when Louise Bennett Coverley, the folklorist from Jamaica, passed approximately 4 years ago, the first time we started to Miss Lou, popularly known as Miss Lou, folklorist, poet, dramatist, passed away about four summers ago. It was the first time we started to explore this body of work. So we had a nine night for her, which is a traditional passing over exercise for one, for the family, but two, for also marking the transition from this earthly plane to a wider cosmic plane. So we started with that and then followed up with a whole series of stories a couple of years later on La Diablesa and Old Haig and Sukiya and Moongaza, and realize there's a whole lot that's out there.
Yes, and it is good to know that you can get together different individuals from the Caribbean who may have a different explanation, a different name to wake or how a wake is done, the nine night, etc. And I'm sure it's a whole learning process, even for you.
Well, not even for me, it's especially for me, because I think we sometimes make the assumption that our piece of the world is the entire world.
That's right.
And where the Caribbean is concerned, many times it's not the case of calling the same thing by a different name. For many of us, it's actually a completely different exercise. Because of how we even got to the region. It wasn't a very tidy process. It wasn't a case that many of us decided to book passage on QE2 and come holiday in this part of the world. We were dragged to kicking and streaming, and we were dragged for many of us from different parts of the region, and we're just lumped together. And therefore, there have been an active intermingling, commingling of experiences, of traditions, of ideas with regard to how best to preserve our identity and how we interact with our ancestors, how we worship. All of that has had to go through a change on this side of the Atlantic.
And then you realize that we are more the same than we are not.
Well, we are always far more the same. I think what as human beings we tend to always perceive that the only people that are important are us, and then all those people, something must be wrong with them by virtue of the fact that they're not us. And one of the things we try to do with the work of the Caribbean Cultural Theatre is to underscore constantly that there is indeed us, varying hues of us, varying accents with us. But it's a commonality of story, a commonality of a human story and a human existence. And that's one of the things we with regard to even a project like Walking the Dead, was that for all intents and purposes, culture is an accessible human resource that we sometimes tend to want to lock up in museums and lock up in theaters and lock up in books. But our stories were an active part of a day-to-day existence. It was passed down by my grandparents, was passed down by elders in a village, and therefore a university was not an institution. A university was a tree. And you sit down beside on that tree, beside some river or beside some path. Mm-hmm. And there was this gathering of eager minds, of eager spirits to find out, one, who they were, and two, how do they, as an active part of this cultural exercise, pass on traditions. And it's one of the things we aim to do, collect as much of our stories as we can and become part of that active carrying on of knowledge and knowledge exchange within our community.
To the best of your knowledge, has there been a concerted effort to have these cultures included in the school curriculum here in North America?
Concerted effort? Not that I know of, no. There certainly are attempts.
Would you like to see that happen?
I would always love to see the cultures of all the peoples of this great country be respected as integral to the development of this mosaic. I know that there are individuals in different school districts throughout the country that are actively trying to infuse our stories in that wider story. Part of the problem, too, is that in the truest sense, there's no national curriculum. And therefore, district by district, it has to be tackled. In some districts, in Brooklyn, it's an easier route, though not necessarily easy, but it's an easier route. So I know that there are schools in Brooklyn that the musical instrument of choice is no longer the piano or the violin, is the pan. That dance does not always have to be done on your toe point or pity four. Dance is bongo or congo, mm-hmm. Or ballet. So there is a movement. There is an acknowledgement that our communities, that our children need this sort of information, not solely to preserve who they are, but to also interact with a wider community to say, this is what we bring to the table, and it is valuable.
And, you know, of course, it's a learning opportunity, because, you know, knowledge of your surroundings, and as you mentioned, that whole mosaic in the Brooklyn area that is so highly populated with individuals from the Caribbean, and you having your children, your offspring, you may know of the culture of their parents and grandparents, I feel is absolutely necessary.
Yes. And again, in fairness to anybody else who could help us to make sure it's in the school systems or done in communal spaces, we as parents, we as educators, we as community leaders need to acknowledge our responsibility in that process. We need to make sure that our school districts are aware that these things are out there, these resources are out there, and to find out how best they can be integrated. Because no one should have a far greater vested interest in making sure that your story is told than you. And therefore, going to PTA meetings, becoming part of community boards, is not just for other people. These are the places where decisions are being made, and we therefore need to be there.
Because that has always been a problem. You know, not supporting the PTAs, not attending the PTAs, and then when decisions are made, those who do not attend those meetings are the first to complain. But, you know, I can't understand how come this wasn't implemented.
And of course, but we are always down there to make sure that if somebody touch with child pocket, okay, or disturb with child here, or the child can't find the pencil, if children still use pencil anymore, we are down there at a lick. So we need to be down there too to invest time and energy in far more positive things. So before the child loses the pencil, we make sure that the child is not just recording other people's stories with those pencils. That part of that narrative is fully one. that we important, that we culture good, that what we talking about is not just some alien construct. We part of this thing. And for many of us, I know it is very hard to wrap our brains around the concept that we live in the United States. Because you have to remember, most of us only come here for a little time to make some money to go back home. And that may indeed be true, but the little time stretches from 5 and 10 years to 50 and 60. And we come here as passengers and go back home as cargo. Yeah. So we have to re-examine our relationship with the space that we are now in.
Yeah.
And portray as much of the positive about us as possible.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Caribbean, on the Uhuru Radio Network. And we're speaking with Ewan MacDonald. He is the artistic director of the Caribbean Cultural Theater out of Brooklyn. If you'd like to join us in discourse, if you're calling within the United States, you can get us at area code 727-565-1599. If you're calling us from across the pond in the United Kingdom, it's 44020-8133-6629. You can use today's technology. You can Skype us. Our Skype ID is Uhuru Radio, U-H-U-R-U Radio, or you can email us. Our email address is DJ, as in disc jockey, at uhururadio.com. Just before we paused, Ewan, you mentioned about, you know, performing in communal spaces. Many theater groups find it difficult to find a space to perform, even though theater can be performed anywhere. Has this been an issue for the Caribbean Cultural Theater?
In a word, yes. Oh, God, boy. Space, and I don't know if the, I would love to find the emerging arts organization that space as a resource is not a problem. I think for those, they probably are aligned to an academic institution. And that's one of the reasons why we treasure our relationship with St. Francis College, because it has afforded us, certainly over the course of the past 5 years, mm-hmm. an opportunity to develop and grow many of our programs. I know we have been dwelling on the work we have been doing in the folk tradition, but this year we are in the fifth season of a program called Poets and Passion, which is an examination of writers, creative writers from the Caribbean, to provide a platform for them to present their work, to allow audiences to interact with them, and to use the written word as an entree into wider issues affecting Caribbean immigrant communities, Caribbean cultural space, and the dialogue between Caribbean nationals, Caribbean descendants, and their newfound home. I'm very proud of the work that some of these writers have been doing. This year, we would have done programs in all five boroughs under the auspices of Poets and Passion. All five boroughs in the New York City area, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. And over the course of the 5 years, we have featured close to 40 writers. And it may not sound like enough, but why? When you realize that many of these writers, Caribbean nationals themselves, first-generation Caribbean nationals themselves, have never presented their work to Caribbean audiences outside of the Caribbean. This is the first time that many of our audiences have never heard of some of these writers. And these are some guys who have had illustrious careers
that's right,
celebrated by others that we have never appreciated because we just don't know that them exist.
Which takes me back to what I was talking about, but trying to get it into the school curriculum.
But even so, nobody them know about the writer them. Somewhere along the line.
But how would they learn? How would they learn? From whom would they learn?
Because in many ways, there's a very nasty adage that says if you want to hide things from certain
people,
put it in a book.
Mm-hmm.
And for many of us, once we have left the formal educational system, all book lock, going back into a book is totally beyond our concept and scope. And many of these writers are indeed now being introduced into the U.S. school curriculum. One of our earlier writers, Malachi, his poems are routinely taught in the Fort Lauderdale School District. One of our more recent writers, Tiffany Yannick, one of her books has been picked up by the school district in Mount Vernon. We are hoping soon, knock wood, pray hard, Edwidge Danticat, we are hoping to host her early next year. Edwidge is on New York Times bestseller list,
yes,
just because her name is associated with any book. So it's not as if the culture is not out there. Many times, as I'm saying, we have a responsibility to know that Wagwan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just other people's job to make sure it is out there. Because these people are of tremendous talent, tremendous insight.
Resource.
And we sometimes lose out on the conversation because we just never know.
We're going to take a break here on Caribbean Forum. We're chatting with Ewan MacDonald, the artistic director of the Caribbean Cultural Theater out of Brooklyn, New York. We'll be right back after these very, very important words.
This is Max Rameau with Take Back the Land and the Omojo Village. You are listening to UhuruRadio.com, the online voice of the International African Revolution.
It's the Marcus Garvey Legacy Crew.
Set sail with the Uhuru Movement and the African People's Socialist Party on December 12th through 18th for a seven-day cruise to Key West,
Grand Cayman,
and Ocho Rios, Jamaica,
aboard
the luxurious Carnival Freedom cruise ship. Special guests include our very own Chairman Omali Eshitela, leader of the Uhuru Movement, and the very talented Ron Bob Simple, creator of the Spirit of Marcus Garvey. A one-man show in which Simple delivers an uncanny exactness of the legendary Garvey, transporting the onlooker back to the time of the revolutionary spirit that gave birth to the African Socialist Movement. Cabin prices are from $519 per person. For more information, please visit our website at uhurulegacycruise.com. Again, that's uhurulegacycruise.com. Book your room today with Tanya's Travel by calling 352-232-2131 or by email at tanyastravel@bellsouth.net. We hope you all can set sail with us on the ship named for our struggle, Freedom, Uhuru.
Get your news, views, and interviews which affect Caribbean and Caribbean American nationals by tuning into the Caribbean Forum with Ron Bob Semple here on the Uhuru Radio Network.
Yes, welcome back to Caribbean Forum. Those are the sounds of Creole jazz. We're talking with Ewan MacDonald, the artistic director of, as I mentioned, the Caribbean Cultural Theater. You mentioned before the break, Mr. MacDonald, that you have been using the space there at St. Francis College for about 5 years.
Yes.
Have there been restrictions put on the group as to what could be produced there in their space?
In fairness, they have not been as intrusive as they could be. But in practical terms, yes, there are tremendous restrictions. There are restrictions always with regard to any other space we use, because by and large, we don't own anything as a community. We are sometimes marveled at the fact that we go to a particular city. Last occasion was in Chicago, and we were at the Irish Cultural Center doing our work for predominantly the Caribbean community. There's no Caribbean community center over there. So I applaud an effort. Recently, I understand that the St. Lucian community has acquired a space, a little space, a FIDEM, and therefore they will celebrate who them is in their own space. If they were standing there, cross bad all night, nobody can put them out and feed them bad water and feed them space.
But having your own space, Irene, as you well know, gives you the ability to not just expand, but to really do some serious work. And that's one of the reasons I asked that question, is whether there are any restrictions put on the group.
Restrictions in terms of schedule to begin with.
Absolutely.
Things you would just love to jump into.
Absolutely.
For instance, many of our nine-night celebrations have not been held on the ninth night.
Okay.
We have had to massage them out differently as tributes in a far longer term, the most recent one of which was a tribute to the late Professor Rex Nettlefold of the University of the West Indies.
Yes.
That was held almost a month and a half after his passing.
Mm.
We have restrictions in terms of subject matter. Some of the things we can or cannot touch, largely because of Catholic teachings, it's a Catholic institution. And going back to the work in the folk tradition, I remember the day after Nettlefold's nine-night. Normally these death rituals, death observances are done on either a Friday or a Saturday. This one was done on a Sunday evening. And as you well know, a large portion of these ritual observances is the pouring of libation to invoke the spirits.
Right.
And approximately 8:30 the Monday morning, the entire university community was calling my telephone number to find out why are we drinking rum in the people in place. And I'm trying to find out why are they leaving messages that we're drinking rum, we're not drinking any alcohol on the premises, only to realize that we didn't have enough time to air out the space after the function. So now everybody's coming in Monday morning, and you know Jamaican white rum can be very strong. And
potent, yeah.
Oh, yes, and it licked the entire university community one time. So we were a bunch of alcoholics there the Sunday evening. So it's things like that. And it creates for a robot, but it also creates for a level of respect. And we are part of a coalition of, at this point, they call us active talkers. Looking at what does it take to, one, acquire, but two, maintain a space. Whenever that comes down the pike, and what sort of a space would be required that a number of us as arts practitioners would be able to find a home in. But there are communities that are doing this, and thank God for especially universities that are a bit more open to us and many of the strange things we have to do to make sure the culture lives.
Yes, I know the funding from the Arts Council and has been put into chopping block for years now. Mm-hmm. How difficult is it for the Caribbean Cultural Theater to get funding so you can keep on moving on?
Well, I thought this was going to be a friendly conversation. I don't know why he would bring up things like that.
I'm just trying to be neutral, Mr. McDonald.
No, you're neutrality where we are funding and the arts is concerned. It's a hard situation anywhere in the world you go where that relationship is concerned. In this economic climate, far more so. In fairness to governments, their revenue streams are drying up, and their demands are never drying up. And unfortunately, many of us do not perceive culture, the arts, as being an integral part of the checklist of what needs to happen in our community for us to be textured and rounded individuals. And therefore, if the choice is between police officers and dancers are going to go. If it's a choice between warders in a penitentiary or teachers, cultural teachers, arts practitioners, get rid of those. It's intriguing to realize that we are far more willing as a community, as many communities around the world, to give a high schooler a job as a police officer or a corrections officer, a high school leaver as a police officer or a corrections officer, paying them many times more than the starting salary of an elementary school teacher, that we are willing to invest in an after-school program to make sure that our children do not end up in the hands of a police officer or a corrections officer. But that is how we view the benefits of our tax dollar investment. government, and we need to help our elected officials sometime re-examine the paradigm that making sure that my child understands who he is grounded in the connections of family and culture. It's far more important than just locking them up and dragging them off to jail and billing fancy jail and passing them off as the next contract to some outside investor.
I don't know if it still exists, but when I was in New York, it was much easier to produce a dance than to produce a theatrical production. You get the response that, "Ah, mommy, I have no time for no concert." Yet one would go to a dance and spend $5 for a glass of orange juice.
$5 for a glass of orange juice. I've been out with certain people, and they're walking away with a drinking time for a party of 10 for over $1,000. You look at them and say, "Nice." But I don't know if it's a fair analogy, because activities like carnivals and parties will always attract far more persons and interests than many other aspects of the arts. And therefore, I think the question needs to be one of proportionate response and access. Everybody know where we can find the nearest rum bar or disco joint or party. I don't know if the same is true, that everyone knows where they can find the nearest exhibit of a Caribbean visual artist, or the next recital of a Caribbean or whatever grouping of color, dance or music recital. And that's partly our responsibility, but also partly our standing reality of how these different art forms play in a human space. We're not unique in that regard. But it doesn't mean that we should not continue to do. Because the interesting thing is that for many of those individuals, it's not just the case they don't want to come to your theatrical presentation or your high art program. It's because they just don't know of its existence. So maybe we need to use the party room as the walls for our gallery, as opposed to having a museum exhibit. Because with people, they're not going into the museum. One of the largest cultural institutions in the New York metropolitan area, certainly in Brooklyn, the Brooklyn Museum of Art,
right,
routinely has what they call a first Saturday exercise, where at after 5 p.m. you can enter the museum's precincts without paying. But then the admission fee to enter the museum is $10 anyway, so it's not a monumental amount of money. They've been doing the first Friday exercise, I think, in excess of 10 years, underwritten by a major corporation. And what is interesting is that, yes, they will have walking tours of gallery spaces and dance recitals and violin recitals. But if you want to see bodies, is the huge exhibition hall on the top floor that have double-digit thousand people dancing to whatever DJ they have playing. So yes, they have all these thousands of people coming through the door, but they're still congregating in the spaces that they are far more familiar in. But they're now having to either walk all the way up to the fourth or fifth floor to get to this space, and therefore, in the process, they are passing these other strange things. So yeah, I'm going to explore these strange African masks, and probably my DJ is not yet playing, so I'll sit in on a film. And that now becomes part of the conversation of, wow, I just didn't know that this thing was happening. And the next time, they probably will go to a different exhibition deliberately than just heading up to their dance space. We are doing some of that. Not as much as we would like, admittedly, but we're doing some of that. One of the things that fascinates us, fascinates me certainly, with regard to forms like Poets and Passion, or a reading series that's now in its fifth year, is the interaction between our community and these writers, and the levels of questions that are asked. Because many times, many of these people do not have first degrees. They certainly don't have second degrees, most of them. But because of those artifices, we have constantly told our people that their opinions don't matter, their thought process is suspect, and therefore, what you know about culture, what you know about art and all, and make these things as if they are some alien concept. And they really want to be part of it. And we need to return to a cultural space, a societal space, that creation is an important part of our lives, and we celebrate creators. And our artisans, our educators have always been part of that dialogue, that tradition of making sure that our communities are celebrated in a textured way.
Speaking of our communities, now this may sound extreme. We were talking a little earlier about acquiring space and having the flexibility to do whatever production you would like because of your own space, having that own control. This may, as I said, sound extreme. Every Labor Day in Brooklyn, there are no less than 2.5 million people on Eastern Parkway. Has there ever been any thought or consideration of a group of organizations, be it theatrical or whatever, to get together with the Wediaca that promotes and presents that carnival on Labor Day? If we were to collect a dollar from each of those revelers towards building a state-of-the-art theater for our community, is there any likelihood in that happening?
There's always a likelihood. There's always a likelihood for many of the things you checked off there. I don't know of a dialogue, a formalized dialogue happening with arts organizations and with the American Day Carnival Association with regard to space acquisition. We are unfortunately one of the cultural activities we embrace is being separate in many ways. So most times we don't even know who the other cultural organizations are until you discover them, like Columbus.
We are as fragmented as the Caribbean is geographically.
Yes. So that's part of the hurdle we would have to look at. But also, I don't know how practical it is with regard to even collecting the single dollar from each reveler. One of the things we were discussing this week in terms of an evaluation of the Poets and Passion program is that we have moved from not charging at all because they're just readings and we're afraid that our people will not pay to come to our reading, to now having a suggested minimum donation. A whopping amount of $5. And many times when we do the calculation at the end, you and when you see them give the donation, people are really looking to peel off the biggest $1 bill they can find. So you now telling them that each person must drop $1, I'm sure we'll be walking away with millions of pennies.
I do not think millions of dollars.
I
respectfully disagree with you, Eben.
And that is part of the thing, you know. Let me have the dialogues of who can agree and who will disagree. But is there a concert? I think the subject really is there a concerted effort to acquire physical space to preserve our culture as well as these wider cultural spaces? And I shudder to imagine that this not happening.
The unfortunate
thing I can say is that I have not heard it happening.
I remember there was that abandoned movie theater on Flatbush Avenue.
Yes,
up near Farragut, is it?
Yes.
Near the Tilden area. And it was up for sale. And I think a group of associations wanted to get together and try to purchase that building. Is it occupied now?
If it's the Lowell's Kings you're referring to, no, it's still not occupied. If it's the Biltmore has been gutted and has been turned into commercial space. But the Lowell's Kings, I think they wanted to go for landmark preservation, but that building also comes with tremendous hurdles.
Because landmark preservation, and it has been empty for the last 15, 18 years?
Yes, and they're hoping that because of with that landmark status, that they will be able to access other monies to the table. But one of the hurdles I understand with that particular space, and anybody who takes it on, God bless them.
You're listening to...
Because it will cost more, literally, to remove the asbestos from the building.
It's because it's been sitting there so long.
Building down to the ground and build something new. So that was the last thing I said in regard to that singular space.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network. We are chatting with Ewan MacDonald, the artistic director of the Caribbean Cultural Theater, and they've got an upcoming project next month, Poets and Passion. We'll take a break and come back, and we'll chat and wrap up with information that you need to get with regard to supporting this project. We'll be right back.
You're listening to WhoRadio.com, voice of the International African Revolution.
It's the Marcus Garvey Legacy Crew.
Set sail with the Uhuru Movement and the African People's Socialist Party on December 12th through 18th for a seven-day cruise to Key West, Grand Cayman, and Ocho Rios, Jamaica, aboard the luxurious Carnival Freedom cruise ship. Special guests include our very own Chairman Omali Eshetela, leader of the Uhuru Movement, and the very talented Ron Bob Semple, creator of the Spirit of Marcus Garvey. A one-man show in which Semple delivers an uncanny exactness of the legendary Garvey, transporting the onlooker back to the time of the revolutionary spirit that gave birth to the African Socialist Movement. Cabin prices are from $519 per person. For more information, please visit our website at uhurulegacycruise.com. Again, that's uhurulegacycruise.com. Book your room today with Tanya's Travel by calling 352-232-2131 or by email at tanyastravel@bellsouth.net. We hope you all can set sail with us on the ship named for our struggle, Freedom Uhuru.
Tune into Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, every Saturday morning from 9 to 11 a.m. on the Uhuru Radio Network. We examine issues that affect Caribbean and Caribbean American nationals, both at home and across the diaspora. If you're not listening to Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple, here on the Uhuru Radio Network, then your radio is not on. Yes, the natural words of Robert Nesta Marley, a natural mystic. Yeah, this is Caribbean Forum with me, Ron Bob Semple. We are wrapping up our chat with Ewan MacDonald, the Caribbean Cultural Theater in Brooklyn. Is in the process of presenting their Poets and Passion evening. Ewan, who are some of the artists that will be presented? And give us some detailed information as to when and where, please.
As I indicated earlier, Poets and Passion is our monthly reading series, an exploration of Caribbean writers and Caribbean readers. And issues surrounding literature and how that can be used as an entry into a wider reality. Fifth year we have entered in, and I'm tremendously excited that in addition to the 5 years of doing it downtown Brooklyn at St. Francis College, we have launched a session up in the Bronx at 2230 Light Street in the Bronx. The Carl and Faye Rodney Resource Center. So our next writers there will be on December 8th. Andreen Bonner from Jamaica, the writer of Olympic Garden, and Elizabeth Nunez from Trinidad and Tobago, the writer of Anna in Between. Both will be presenting their work there. But one of the nuanced difference with the sessions in the Bronx is that we are also looking at writers in a larger world. So both of these writers are academics and educators in their own right. Andreen teaches at the high school level. Dr. Nunez teaches at the college level. And to look at literature, language, arts, and how that interplays with our students. So that's Wednesday, December 8th. Carlin Fay Rodney Resource Center in the Bronx.
What's the address there?
Repeat that, please.
What's the address there?
2230 Light Street, 2230 Light Street in the Bronx. Right off the train, you come off the number 5 train and just walk down, you're there. It's a lovely space that they're developing. The Jamaica Progressive League owns the building, and they're developing this resource center for the community. So we're there Wednesday, December 8th, with Elizabeth Nunez and Andreen Bonner. And on the Thursday, I don't know how we pan it back to back. It's tremendously taxing on me and our programmers. But on the Thursday, we are back in Brooklyn, celebrating our 5th year of Poets and Passion at St. Francis College, downtown Brooklyn. Every train that comes downtown Brooklyn is within walking distance of the space. It's 182 Remsen Street between Clinton and Court Street in the downtown section of Brooklyn. And on that evening, Thursday, December 9, we are featuring Christian Campbell, who is a writer like many people from the Caribbean. He pulls ancestry from different parts of the region. One parent is Bahamian, the other parent is Trinidadian. He lives in Toronto, but he just won a major book prize out of London, England.
Who is this?
Christian Campbell. So we are featuring him on the 9th at St. Francis College, downtown Brooklyn. And joining Christian is Jacynth Henry Martin from St. Kitts Nevis, spoken word artist. And in another life, she was also Minister of Culture in St. Kitts Nevis. So we're hoping to have a lively conversation, not just about them and their respective artistic work, but also the penetration of culture, the preservation of culture, because Christian is a lecturer at the University of Toronto, and Jacynth is still actively involved in cultural preservation in St. Kitts Nevis.
How can one get further information?
Well, we are still in the old age. We still have to do things by telephone and email. So our telephone number is 718-783-8345. That's 718-783-8345. They can email us at info@caribbeantheatre.org. info@caribbeantheatre.org.
Is that T-R-E or T-E-R?
Yes. So we theatre spell R-E, not E-R. Our theatre, the end of theatre is T-H-E-A-T-R-E. But we found that more people seem to have problems spelling Caribbean than spelling the theatre. That part we find fascinating. But it's Caribbean Theatre, and the theatre is spelled re.org. We are struggling to get up the website. It was up for a while, it come back down. So hopefully before the end of the year, the website will be back up.
Ewan MacDonald, thank you very much for joining us here on Caribbean Forum. As we've been talking all morning, actually, we spoke with Jimmy Jean-Louis out from the Dominican Republic, and now Ewan MacDonald, and the underlying thread that's been through these interviews is that you have to, you should, and you must know your history. Here is Hopeton Lewis just advising us to know our history. Ewan, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks to your audience. And thanks for the invitation. We hope we buck up soon.
Absolutely.
What good.
Know your history, black man. Find your roots, African. Know your history, black man. Find your roots, African. Day and night, you see black people, we deserve our rights. So know
your history, black man. Find your roots, African. Know your history, black man. Find your own identity. Identity. I said it's a serious time that we live in. Such a serious, serious time that we live in. Know where you come from. How did you get here? Find out now. You ought to be aware of people who don't know their history. It's doomed to repeat the tragedy. So know your history, black man. Find your roots, African. Know your history, black man. Find your own identity. Identity. I said it's a serious.
Yes, we are living in some serious times, and yes, you should know your history, know what's around you. I'd like to thank our guest this morning here on Caribbean Forum, Jimmy Jean-Louis, the Haitian-born actor, director, and producer. And his documentary will be out soon, Haiti 1653. And he's also the founder of Hollywood Unites for Haiti. And you can log on to their website, HollywoodUnitesForHaiti.org or HUFH.org. We would also like to thank Ewan MacDonald, the artistic director of the Caribbean Cultural Theater out of Brooklyn, New York. And you can contact them for any further information by calling area code 718-783-8345. Watch your thoughts. They become words. Watch your words. They become actions. Watch your actions. They become habits. Watch your habits. They become character. Watch your character, for it becomes your destiny. If it is to be, it is up to me. Have yourself a productive week, and see you next week. I'm Ron Bob Semple.
Know your history, black man. Find your roots, Jamaica.